You're very welcome back to the show. Now, a new book looking at the history of this country, largely dealing with the period 1910 to 1925, entitled The Years of Turbulence, is available now. It was a decade and a half which saw the Home Rule Movement, the Gaelic Revival, the rise of the Ulster and Irish Volunteers, the 1916 Rising, of course, and the following turmoil of the War of Independence, the Treaty and Civil War. One of its editors, Professor Diarmaid Ferriter, one of Ireland's best-known historians, joins me on the line now. Professor Ferriter, good morning to you.
Good morning, Gavin.
And thank you very much for joining us. In terms of our history, and maybe this is a very difficult question to answer because different eras provide different events, but with all that happened in this 15 years, is it possible or is it correct to call it the most important decade and a half in the history of this, in the recent history of this island?
Certainly in the recent history. I mean, you're just talking about so much happening in a relatively short period of time. You're also talking about a significant death toll of about 7,500 people from 1916 up to the end of the Civil War in 1923. That's not a very large body count in the overall scheme of things when you look at what was going on internationally at that time. But one of the things we're interested in is looking at the nature of that violence and the impact that it had in a small country, in particular on a small island. And if you look at all of the legacies of that period, obviously there are political legacies. There's the partition of Ireland, there's the whole question of the role of violence and the continuity in relation to the role of violence. So there are an awful lot of very complicated legacies there. And I think when you consider the impact of those events and you consider how we think about them, what we're also interested in is looking at how our kind of framework of inquiry or our framework of interpretation for that whole period has changed a lot, given all the new information that has come into the public domain in recent times. So it's really about new perspectives on what are obviously and have always been very controversial themes, but we have a lot more information on it now.
That's what I was going to talk to you about, because what new can we learn, or what new information has come to light in relation to a period of history that, in terms of, in an Irish context, has probably had more written about it than any other?
Absolutely, and you'll see that particularly next year, obviously. I mean, there's a huge interest in 1916, and there are already hundreds of titles in relation to that period. But this question of sources and new information is a very relevant one, and we do have new perspectives to bring. And, you know, the idea that the history of that period was in any way completely written is really open to question. You know, I mean, you can talk about all the books that are there. Some of them have been there for quite some time. But a lot of people were working without access to information on how people were living their lives, how ordinary people were living their lives and how they fared. I mean, some, you know, suffered terrible things during this period. Some benefited from it later on in terms of political status or where they went in life. But to give an example of the kind of information I'm talking about now that we didn't have access to 15 or 20 years ago, the actual words of the volunteers themselves and the experiences. There was a Bureau of Military History established in the 1940s and 50s, and they basically collected testimony from people who were veterans of the period, and those statements were released in 2003. And then more recently, we've had the military service pension files, and they are the people who would have applied for pensions based on their military service during that period. And again, we get a huge amount of detail there because people had to fill in very detailed application forms to account for their every move during that period. And again, it gives you a very strong sense of what they experienced. But also it gives you an overview of the kind of conditions that they found themselves in at a much later stage in the 1930s and the 1940s.
Okay.
So there's an awful lot of that kind of information.
And what sort of conditions are we talking about? Or when you're looking through these documents and seeing details of people's lives, what new facts are you learning?
Well, a lot of it is very harrowing because you're getting a very searing social history of that period. A lot of people who find themselves in dire straits, who, you know, gave up a very important part of their lives when they were young, involved in this struggle. And many of them are unemployed. Many of them are finding it very difficult to make ends meet. You're not talking about people applying for pensions that would make them in any way wealthy. You're looking at people who are really struggling to survive. And they do detail and document their current living conditions in later times. So it's a very powerful social history, and it's also a great catalogue of disappointment, because the vast majority of people who applied for pensions didn't get them. The bar was set very high in relation to the awarding of the pensions, and of course that can generate its own societal tensions and its own resentments about whether or not people's sacrifices have been adequately recognised and whether what they claim to have done during that period could be verified. So, I mean, it's difficult. It's fascinating. But it's by no means, you know, justifying the traditional heroic narrative of the revolution and its aftermath. It's a hell of a lot more complicated. And I suppose what we're getting are so many different layers of experience that you can't wrap it up in one bow of experience, you know.
Was that not always inevitable, though, given the turmoil that had gone before it, and given the fact that we were, in compared to other countries, relatively slow to industrialise, perhaps, and had quite a rural base? Was it not always likely that people would struggle financially for decades afterwards?
That was always likely, and I suppose what was always likely is that, you know, the promises of the revolutionary period were always going to be very difficult to deliver on. We have an awful lot of focus now on, you know, the 1916 proclamation, for example, promises of equality, greater prosperity, and, you know, trying to translate that into concrete action or trying to deliver on those promises in the aftermath is very, very difficult, and priorities obviously change, and there was a tendency to emphasise the importance of stability as opposed to trying to deliver on those promises. So there was a certain inevitability about that, but I think one thing we can do as well is, you know, for all of the focus on the rhetoric and the promises of that era, is just to have a look at a more grassroots level. You know, what were people experiencing at that time? How do they negotiate their relationship with the IRA or with violence, or how were communities treated in relation to the conduct of the war? I mean, we've essays in this book now on violence against women during that period, on people who were being shot as informers, on how do you define loyalty during that period? There are a lot of people who have championed various causes, including women who are looking for the vote, the suffragettes who are in there as well, and then people getting on with their lives during extraordinary periods of upheaval, including people in the GAA. You know, the sporting experience of that time, and the extent to which members of the GAA reflected Irish society generally. Some of them, of course, very much caught up in the War of Independence, but many GAA members went off to fight in the British Army during the First World War, and we don't hear about those experiences much. So we are getting a more rounded sense of the Irish experience, both at national and local level.
And there'll be a renewed focus on this period of time, of course, in the year ahead with the centenary of the Rising. What do you make of the plans that are in place to commemorate that event? And does more need to be done, maybe, to bring in some of the aspects that you're highlighting here, perhaps some of the negative aspects in particular in terms of quality of life that people had?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think you can always do more. I mean, if you look back at how commemorations were handled in the past, they tended to focus very much on an elite, and they tended to follow very much a heroic narrative. This was a story of a proud, oppressed people who rose against their oppression. And of course, there are still elements of that that are very true and very germane. But I think there's a stronger sense now of looking at the kind of experiences I mentioned there. And a lot of this is actually driven at local level. When we talk about commemoration, of course, the state will have its official 1916 programme, and there'll be the ceremonial aspects to that, and there'll be the focus on the GPO and the, you know, the military parade, that kind of thing. But I think a lot of commemoration will be driven from below, where people in all parts of the country will be looking at how they can remember their community's experiences. And that's as it should be. I mean, commemoration should belong to the people. It shouldn't just belong to the state. The state has an important role to play, obviously, and they need to fund capital projects. There's an interesting museum going into the GPO, for example. But I think, you know, a lot of what can be done at local level, particularly through the local libraries, through schools, through just getting people to get a sense of the different layers of that experience. And it's not something that should be controlled from the centre. So I think there's a lot to praise in the official state programme. But, you know, I do think a lot of the dynamic has to come from people themselves at local level.
Sure. Well, I know a lot of efforts in that locally here in Clare and many other areas as well. Your book is Years of Turbulence. You've edited with Susanna Reardon. It's available in bookshops online and from ucdpress.ie. Professor Jim McFerriter, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Gab.